This podcast is supported by Siemens, your partner for industrial-grade AI.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of our Industrial AI podcast. My name is Robert Weber, and it's a pleasure to talk to
Peter Sieber. Good morning, Robert. Good morning, evening, afternoon to all of you, dear listeners.
Good morning, Peter. A new episode, a new week. I had a short night because my newborn child was awake from 1 a.m. to 3 p.m. in the night. So let's do it quickly in this case.
As long as you stay awake for the next half hour.
I will do my very best.
God. Okay, let me start. You can listen then.
You can ask me questions.
I will. In my second piece, I will be asking you a question. But I'm going to start with what I think was this week the big one. It's about world models. Actually, we are two months after you and I, and this time a relatively small group of interested folks, we met together for our industrial AI get-together around the team of Stratus Gabus at the University of Amsterdam, and we talked about world models, remember?
Yes.
And only 2 months later, there's two startups, one, they must have listened in, and each of them raised $1 billion. Now, a couple of weeks back, already, we could have mentioned it, I believe, last time. There was Fei Fei Li, you know, she started with World Labs. And for those of you that have not heard, actually, Fei Fei Li has been a little bit more in the background, I believe, relative to the guy we're going to be talking about next. But she was the one who, in 2006, or since 2006, 20 years ago, she initiated the ImageNet database. You know, millions of hand-annotated images, very, very important. So with her, World Labs, quote-unquote, she's going to be doing spatial intelligence, building frontier models that can perceive, generate, interact with the 3D world. So that's number one. And then I believe last week, the big thing everybody was talking about, Jan LeCun, former Meta guy. He also raised $1 billion for his AMI, stands for Advanced Machine Intelligence, and whose, quote-unquote, main goal is to build intelligent systems that understand the real world. So, I mean, Jan has been very out.
$1 billion,
it's a lot of money still.
It's interesting because when you have a look at the investors, because Prometheus, Amazon is also investing in Jan LeCun, and they are doing this maybe something not very different what Jan LeCun is doing. So there's money going around and around and around. So very interesting.
Now, yeah, when you say $1 billion is a lot, we really move into this potential problem of from where? From the billion, that's where it starts. With the millions, we are still the same, for example, in the German language and the US English language. I think in general, the English language, I'm not sure. And then from some point on, like with the billion, when we say a billion, it's three zeros more in the English language than it is when we say it in German. And soon I hear we are going to have the first billionaire. Is that correct now when I say billion? Or is it going to be the trillionaire then probably, right?
That's a trillion, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, a couple of zeros. It's not that important. I believe we're going to be hearing a lot of any of both of these in our world of physical AI, robotics, industrial AI in general. We're going to keep you posted. I'm looking forward to see. I mean, Jan has been really outspoken, right? For a relatively long time, for a year at least, maybe even longer than that, that language only cannot lead to intelligence. He's been very, very outspoken about that, right? And so now he has to deliver. And I assume, well, at least he found the investors that believe in exactly what he's been saying, right?
Absolutely. It's interesting because last week I had a really exciting talk with Mr. Industrial AI, Boris Scharinger. He was visiting us in Linz and he gave a talk there. And we also talked about tech. We talked about scaling AI, the market. And how big the market really is for companies like Siemens or Beckhoff or our traditional automation companies, and how big the market is when you delete, for example, the whole infrastructure people, and then you delete the infrastructure, you delete the whole consulting companies out of this AI bubble market predictions, and then the market isn't so big anymore. So
1% or what? Less.
No. No. But I think, yeah, Boris is right. So the whole topic infrastructure, NVIDIA, Amazon, Azure, the whole data center stuff, right? It's also part of the AI market. Then you have the whole consulting business in the AI market. So let's see what will happen in the market.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, I was going to react. We said last time, we said who's going to be the Coca-Cola. And we have hundreds, we have of our listeners, of you, dear listeners, I'm sure that you are now smiling and think, yes, I'm going to be it, or we are going to be it. We have thousands of companies in our industrial environment that all have this potential. And it doesn't have to be the when we say Coca-Cola, we mean, sure, it can be the size of a Coca-Cola, you know, and can be US, or it can be Chinese or Asian or European, it doesn't matter. But it can also be the way typically in Germany, our, let's say, economic infrastructure has been, you know, hundreds of hidden champions. So, and I assume that that's what we're going to have as well. And, you know, I mean, I can only say, sure, it could not have been the other way around, right? You cannot have first a Coca-Cola we compare to refrigeration, right? Because they needed refrigeration. So you first need the infrastructure before you can then say, okay, now I'm going to build a Coca-Cola using the infrastructure. So, I mean, it's almost like an economic law, I guess. You first need the infrastructure and then you can build a company on top of it.
And then you need somebody to explain you how to drink your Coca-Cola. So the consulting business.
I guess so. You are aware that you're talking to a person that has been doing some AI consulting starting 10 years ago.
Exactly.
Yeah, but you're right.
At the end of his talk, he gave me a very, very good advice also for you, Peter, when we do podcasts with guests or with companies. And he said, whenever a VC investor does PR or advertising for their startup, caution is advised, because then something maybe is fishy. So I will keep that in mind.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to stay or move too close. I don't know the VC market, to be honest. I know it, I guess, in general, what it means to put money into companies, but I'm not following that in detail. So I can't kind of confirm that is maybe happening here or there. I've no idea.
A lot.
Is it?
This is happening a lot. Okay. Yeah. I checked my LinkedIn feed last weekend, and then I checked what Boris said, and yes, he's right.
Okay. Yeah, I'll keep an eye on that. I must, not sure that it is the way that I, but I'll think about it. I'll think about when looking for, but I think you do the same. We don't typically need, I can say as well, need to look for new content, because you and I were so busy in an environment of LinkedIn and all the other, you know, we meet so many people that, you know, every day there's like one or two things of which we say, could that be something? And then we consider. So it's almost like that we feel interested in a topic rather than, I mean, at least speaking for myself, rather than seeing it being promoted. But I'll keep my eyes and ears open. If I move into the second point, it's actually confirming what we just talked about.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I saw that Google has integrated Intrinsic, which was their moonshot robotics kind of, right? So they seem to be making it. I think that's what I read. That's what they say themselves, making into a core business. I'm not sure that the next thing. Now the question is going to come to you, Robert. As a robotics guy, you know them a lot better. You know the robotics world very well. So I've seen this reintegration, I think you can call it, into Google as a means not of becoming yet another robotics company, of which we have hundreds at the moment, but positioning Google to own the platform layer underneath the robots, underneath physical AI, very, very much similar to what Google has been doing with Android for mobile. Is that a thought that is completely new to you? Or have you heard it? Or and doesn't matter. What do you think? Could you imagine that that's what they're going to be doing?
Maybe. They have a very strong vision approach, I think, at Intrinsic. I'm not sure, because there was this dream, right? Scaling a platform for robotics, define a new kind of robotics with Intrinsic. Maybe they are now positioning it themselves a little bit different, coming back to Google, to DeepMind. Maybe the scaling was not as they promised each other, that robotics in B2B, industrial robotics application, and to enter the market when it comes to industrial robots, it's heavy. It's not so easy to enter this market with new business models and new ideas. And maybe how to scale a solution was not the right thing, not the right idea, not the right time to do that. But let's see what they are doing now when they are coming back to the DeepMind guys.
So when I read this, I went to their homepage, and the first thing you see on their homepage is this AI for industry challenge. Quote unquote, open competition, developers, roboticists, you want to tackle the hardest, most valuable problems, blah, blah, blah. Use the Intrinsic developer environment flow state. It's what it's called. Cutting edge, and you can win prizes. That seems to be completely supporting this hypothesis that they are building the, if it's not Android, maybe it's then the flow state or whatever word they're going to be using. I think this is a very interesting thought.
But it's quite difficult to scale a platform like this, right? There are a lot of platforms in the robotics market, and now there's flow state and we have different platforms. So it's not that easy to work on physical AI and robotics, because robots are difficult.
I'm with you. But who do you have? I did recall that there was an overview of some of the other ones. Now in the past, or still even today, there was a thing called ROS, right? Is that the robotic operating system?
Yes. Yeah, it's still existing. ROS 2 is there. Yeah.
Right. Oh, there you go. So I'm not going to suggest that we're going to continue. I don't know. I don't know if that's the case or not. I always thought that now.
No, this is not a competitor. It's more an add-on on flow state. So yeah.
Right. Or more the basis. I don't know. But then you know better. Now, but the question then is, who are then these other companies, and why would they be better positioned than a company like Google, who has already done exactly this one time with Android for the complete mobile world, but only 90% of the mobile world. You know, the other 10% is Apple. Is that correct?
Yep.
And that's why. So you have the Apple store, you have the Google store. That is their business. So why would they not, if they can, and if there's one company who could, but then still the question is, who are the other ones? Is it a Microsoft, AWS, or who are they? And then who would not Google have a big chance of winning this game as they have done in the past? And if so, what would that mean? Would we then get a shopping capability for physical AI for robots on top of their Android for robots?
But what would you see, for example, when you also talk with the Neura guys, right? The German humanoid and robotics company. I did an interview with them, and they are building a Neuraverse. It's also a platform for models, for capabilities to share. So there's a lot happening in the whole robotics one. Then we had this episode with the welding robot guys from Ohio. They are building a platform only for welding, right? So interesting to see. I think B2B is different to B2C. That's the old story, right?
Yeah. I'm with you. But the platform, so I'm completely with you that there's going to be very specific applications, all these vertical applications. You just mentioned welding. There's going to be 100 other very specific applications only in our industrial environment, as there's going to be 1,000 in the retail environment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But my feeling, that's how it's been in the past. Maybe it's going to be different this time. That is on the application layer at the top level where the user is going to be interfacing with, you know, I'm going to be doing some welding, you know, tell me I want this and that, and then it's going to go through this thing. But on the layer that is under that, at least with our mobile phones, that is the layer of the operating system, you know, that is Android for 90% of the world. So I could very well. And then the question is, you mentioned Noura as an example, and do I hear you say that there's 100 robot companies and there's 100 models? That almost feels like, is that necessary? That's my question.
Let's see.
Exactly.
Let's see.
It's very interesting, though, that then, you know, Google is inviting all these robotic companies to take part in their AI for Industry Challenge, right? So there you go. I only have one more, but you have something to share from your side as well?
Yeah, I have something else. So we can all get rich quickly and stop working.
Oh.
Yeah. There is a paper, which ML models trade better? You always have to be careful with papers like this, you know that. But this one is from Oxford, and it turned out pretty well. And for sure, I'm biased, no surprise. LSTM led overall, why XLSTM looked strongest on trading cost resilience. And heads up, I'm biased here, but very interesting.
Really?
If you want to get rich very quick, read the paper, ML models trade better.
Yeah, I think we need a saying that says, like, we're not informing you here with regards to trading, right?
Exactly.
Now we're going to be in big trouble here with you claiming that we told you. Yeah, well, I wrote it in the book with the 100 questions, 100 answers 5 years ago. I think I suggested something like, well, if somebody will have found the algorithmic way to trading, you know, to be 100% certain on trading, they wouldn't share, you know, that's why we did that. Maybe now we know at least better one. And at the same time, they would be smart enough to not use it on a daily basis, you know, and then we have the trade commission or whatever would be going after them. And if this is going to happen, if it's really going to happen soon, then within 1 week, everybody will be using it and then trading is going to be gone, right?
Exactly.
That's what I'm convinced of. It's like exactly what's happening at the beginning. Everybody loves to be producing images and videos. From the very first moment that the quality is so high, we know that the value of creating images and video is going to be zero.
Exactly.
I don't know what that means, right? You know, I wasn't thinking further and looking into what is a director of famous movies going to be doing. It's probably still the creative piece of the human being that is still going to have the value, right? So it doesn't mean that any of us, we can become really, is it creative? All of us can be doing this execution. We ask the model to do something and it does it. Now, what comes out is not necessarily something of a very high creative value, I guess. That's going to be the same with trading. As soon as it really, as everybody's now going to be using XLSTM for trading, if that's what they do. But again, we did not tell you to do that, right? So, and it has happened.
Exactly. But every day I receive a lot of emails by some crypto guys and they all want to work with NXAI on trading machine learning models. It's a huge hype out there.
I can imagine. I only heard about this community from Peter. Peter had started with his claw thing, right? And they have been very difficult for him. Something else from you?
No, I'm fine.
I'm going to be sharing a final. I'm going to shed some light on our Cloister.
No.
So, Cloister, also known as Monastery Confusion.
Monastery.
I'm listening to Pillars of the Earth. You know that one from Ken Follett?
No.
For whatever reason, it has been very, very successful here in Germany. Ken I don't even know. It's from 89. It's about building a cathedral, the development of Gothic architecture in Germany. Yeah. Now, that's where I hear all the time monks walking into or around the cloisters. which is, and those that have been with us for some time, that is a translated name that I gave in the past to what probably correctly should have been monastery, right? As you suggested, because our very first industrial high conference in Würzburg, that was in the Karmelitenkloster Himmelspforten. I looked at it yesterday. I hope that's correct.
That's correct.
That's the one close to the river, right? So if we translate that, it's called Carmelite Convent Heaven's Gate. I'm going to come back to that in a moment. This has got nothing to do with industrial AI, by the way. So it's just it's nevertheless a closure. A cloister, I was then reading, it's from Latin, claustrum, enclosure, is a covered wall, open gallery. I'm going to stop here. I know what it is. Maybe some of you listeners have been in an environment with churches and monastery, and then there is exactly this. Typically, you can walk around and it's shielded. And in the past, it was to separate the monks from the working people that were in this area. So having said that, if ever you're going to be visiting Würzburg, that's what I saw again yesterday, you would like to spend a night in town, you can stay actually at this Carmelite convent, Heaven's Gate, where Robert, Barbara, and I, we organized our first industrial AI conference. So I thought, I hear it almost like daily. I'm listening. I don't read. I can't concentrate. I listen. And every day I hear it a couple of times at the monks. Well, actually, at the very moment, the old church has fallen down on top of the cloister. I thought I just shared it with you and with the people in the past who've been listening to you and me agreeing or disagreeing on the correct word for monastery.
Perfect. So let's move to the main section. Enjoy listening. And thanks a lot, Peter.
Looking forward to it. Robert, thank you. Thank you for listening, dear listeners. I have you with us soon again. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. My guest today is sitting in Amsterdam. Jakob, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Robert. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Once again, Amsterdam, the AI powerhouse in Europe, or one AI powerhouse in Europe. Before we start talking about your company, Zeta Alpha, Jakob, please introduce yourself briefly to the listeners.
Yeah, so Netherlands has indeed been an AI powerhouse for a while. And my own history in AI goes back 3 decades, actually. Before starting any companies, I used to be an AI researcher, kind of pioneering in the machine learning for natural language processing space in the 1990s, and started my first company in 2000. It was a company called TextKernel, which focused on AI for recruitment. And now already with Zeta Alpha, already more than 6 years on the way, providing AI foundational layer for knowledge, especially in industry.
Knowledge in industry, that's your topic. So what concrete business problems are you solving for industrial customers today?
Well, some people might still remember the famous quote by Siemens CEO in the 1990s, who said,
"This podcast is presented by Siemens." Exactly. Yeah.
One of your sponsors. And the CEO of Siemens in the 1990s observed, "If only Siemens knew what Siemens knows."
Yes.
So this is kind of a perennial problem and a famous quote. And actually, for a long time, when AI was not yet so very powerful, this was very hard to solve for, because you had all this information sitting in different IT systems, in people's heads, and it was very unconnected, very hard to search. So basically, Zeta Alpha and our platform and the sort of revolution of modern AI search technology, being able to semantically connect all these different information silos, has really made a new approach to this question possible. And that is one which basically reduces a lot of risk of reinventing the wheel. It makes it very frictionless to look things up in internal knowledge repositories. And it allows companies to move faster from idea to actual projects, products, and realization.
But Jakob, what differentiates your approach from generic AI tools or off-the-shelf large language model solutions?
Yeah, so what you see is that basically there's a lot of generic AI tools, right? Like Copilot, ChatGPT, Claude. And these tools are pretty useless, of course, if they're not connected inside the company to the confidential information, to the proprietary information. That information sits in many industry-specific systems, whether they're PLM systems or ERP systems or other legacy archives of information. And unless you're able to connect all those dots in a secure way and customize the AI to the particular expertise and knowledge domain of your particular company, you're not going to get very good results. So let me give you an example. For example, BASF, the chemical leading manufacturing of the world, is
a customer, right?
Was one of our customers. And of course, if you are a chemical research engineer and you just put a question to ChatGPT or Copilot, it's not going to give you a very accurate or useful answer. It is not until you connect it to your decades of internal research reports and you customize it for your products and chemistry that the results get very accurate. So there's a lot of fine-tuning of the models and of the answer quality, but there's also a lot of kind of customization in terms of the integration into the existing IT infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned you are a platform, and your platform combines, from my point of view, enterprise search, RAG, and AI agents. How do these components technically interact in your architecture?
Yeah, so I think if you want to provide a highly accurate and complete kind of institutional AI layer on top of all your knowledge sources, data integration is like 80% of the difficulty, right? Just making sure that all the different data sources are reachable with, respect to access rights and completeness of information and the right sort of document representations. Then once you have that sort of data foundational layer on top of your different document sources, and also non-document sources like multimodal data or tabular data, and you have all that integrated, then you basically get to the RAG layer, right? You can do retrieval augmented generation, which means that the LLM, the context of the LLM is enriched with, relevant information from your retrieve from your documents. But the sort of simple idea that RAG is just, hooking up an LLM to some kind of vector database, and then, you have embeddings and you have sort of semantic search and you just template the top search results into your context of your LLM, that's a bit naive. And you need a lot more sophisticated details there to make the search really good and to make sure that the answer is, for example, complete. So you need to move to something like deep research, where the agent actually iterates over multiple turns to do different queries and summarize that information, combine it, explore other angles. So then already search is becoming more agentic. And so, there's a lot of hype these days around AI agents. Essentially, agentic RAG or agentic AI systems are kind of a more programming with LLMs type of orchestration of search, tool calling, reasoning, and planning, and kind of long horizon tasks.
How do you integrate with existing data sources like PLM, ERP, SharePoint, or document repositories?
Yeah, so as I said, I think that's where 80% of the difficulty is. And to some extent, it's all in having, existing connectors for those data systems when they're its standard. But if you say something like, integrate with SAP or integrate with Salesforce is not just like one way to integrate. So there's actually a lot of bespoke data modeling and data quality work, and how do you translate these records from more structured, SQL-like data into what is accessible to RAG. So there's a lot of, it depends, and it's never the same.
Maybe I misunderstood something, but do you fine-tune models for specific industries, or is your value primarily in retrieval and orchestration rather than model training?
What you see is that if you go to a domain like chemistry or, mechanical engineering, the kind of machine building space, or electronics, that actually the search itself. So if you have this kind of agentic RAG set up, right, the search itself is the sort of biggest quality control component. So if your search results don't contain the relevant documents, you're never going to make up for it in the sort of other agent orchestration layers. And in fact, there's quite a lot of leverage in tuning your embedding models and in tuning your more sort of more holistic search relevance to the domain. So with Z-Alpha, we have developed a unique approach to actually do that on-prem in the customer's secure data environment.
How do you do that? Can you share a little bit of details?
Yeah. So basically, if you work with experts in these domains, right, they are able to give you some sense of the type of complex questions and answers that they have and that they expect. But usually, they will not be able to give you more than a few hours of their time, which doesn't yield enough data to actually train your own AI models. So we have developed an approach, which we call InParse, which uses that expert input and actually creates quite a large amount of synthetic data on-prem inside the knowledge domain of the customer. Because if you have a search engine, you always have quite a large set of documents, but they are typically not labeled and they are typically not annotated with the right answer. But using this in-parse synthetic data approach, we're able to generate, 10,000, 100,000 examples and then actually tune the search relevance and the embeddings models on that data.
There are a lot of competitors on this market. What is your USP when it comes to your customers?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think the answer lies in the fact that there's no easy silver bullet if you want to do enterprise IT integration. So having the AI experts actually do the projects with the customer, I guess it's kind of become more popular these days with the concept of the forward deployed AI engineer. I think that's kind of the key to success. Of course, the OpenAIs and the Palantirs, et cetera, offer that kind of model, but that's super expensive. And that's kind of where, I think, let's say European local startups have a really unique advantage in working at a faster pace, at, more affordable projects with customers to do that type of bespoke customization without breaking the bank.
Can you share, let's say, two or three examples of how an industrial customer uses your AI platform?
Yeah, I think one of the most interesting examples of partnering with an industrial company is how we work with Festo.
Festo, oh yeah.
Leader, I think everybody in Germany and DACH knows them.
Everybody knows Festo in this podcast.
They are basically a leader in pneumatic and electric factory automation technology. And they were looking how to power a sort of not only a single RAG use case or a single agentic use case, but how to integrate their knowledge about their products and their internal domain knowledge across many different use cases. And what we did there is basically, this was, by the way, a project which was kind of mediated by the Unternehmertum Tech Founders Program.
Oh, in Munich, yeah.
In Munich. And they basically came to us with ask, can you connect our internal product data sheets and manuals to a kind of customer information system? And I think if you know these kind of industrial product information data, it's very complex, right? There are PDFs, they have a lot of pictures, diagrams, tables, very complex visual structure, very long documents. And basically, we worked with them to create this system, which they now call the Festo Virtual Assistant, which is actually on the Festo main page, powering a lot of their customer inquiries about their products. But then once we had deployed our platform with Festo there on-prem, we said, well, what's next? And we challenged them to basically come up with 1, 2, 3, 5 and more different other use cases, which have to do with maintenance, with onboarding of new employees, with validation of technical requirements. And what turned out is that by having this kind of platform like Zeta Alpha, which is not a fully standardized thing, you know, where you cannot change anything, like maybe in Microsoft Copilot, but also not a completely bespoke build your own solution. They were able to move into these use cases, prototyping, validating with the business, and then actually rolling out in production much faster.
Can you share what they are doing when it comes to maintenance with your platform?
Yeah, when you have a situation like what's typical in many factories where you have equipment from many different machine manufacturers in your factory, right? And all of this equipment comes with maintenance manuals. And basically, from those maintenance manuals, you want to do both troubleshooting, but you also want to build maintenance schedules. So our platform is able to basically read in these 30 to 50 different machine manuals that you have for machines in your factory and create from that a unique structured maintenance schedule that you can then execute. But also, when the maintenance technicians have questions about that data, to answer it on the fly.
Mm-hmm. So, do you run the system on-prem or is it a cloud environment?
So, on-prem for most of our customers actually means in the private cloud, in their own, you know, Azure or AWS. We have a more recent collaboration with a kind of sovereign AI player, an emerging sovereign AI player, which is Oedis, part of the Oetker Group.
Oh, cakes. The famous German Oetker Group is very famous for pudding and for cakes and for all the stuff, yeah, consumer goods.
Yeah, not everybody knows that like the Lidl group has their IT department.
Oh, right. Interesting.
Also, the Oetker Group has their IT department, which is called Oedis.
Okay.
And they are actually looking to also present a kind of sovereign European AI alternative by having really, GPU and local LLMs running in their own data center. And yeah, I think that's kind of one step further in having things on-prem.
Can you please summarize, for example, for the Festo case? I don't want to have exact numbers or facts, but can you share a little bit the ROI of the investment in your platform and what is the outcome for Festo? Why are they so happy with the solution?
Yeah, so I don't have exact numbers on the time saved or the productivity improvements. But what you see is that where basically in the situation before, both sales engineers and also customers had to, you know, manually search for information in, you know, 50, 70, 100 page PDFs. Now they get these answers almost instantly. So I think generally speaking, that represents a time savings of 80 to 90% on just looking up that information. But what's more interesting is that it gives a qualitative new channel to interact with that information. And now actually a lot of those things which had to go through, let's say, sales engineers to get an accurate answer can be self-service answered by customers on the website.
Sure. What have been the biggest adoption challenges when deploying your platform in companies like Festo, and how do you overcome them?
Well, I think with AI adoption, one of the biggest challenges is trust. I mean, there's many different providers and there's many different frameworks and software. And what you kind of see is that every software vendor is building some AI into their technology stack. But when you expose this to real domain experts, right, who have been working with a company like Festo for decades and have this kind of exact engineering mindset where the answer needs to be right or completely useless, that's where you see a kind of lack of trust to start with, right? Like the initial position is the AI cannot know this as well as I do. And there it's really kind of through the fine tuning of the accuracy that you earn that trust over time.
Mm-hmm. Are you concerned or afraid or worried that LLMs will offer in the near future out-of-the-box solutions like yours?
So obviously the LLMs are improving, both their agentic capabilities and in their sort of general knowledge of chemistry, physics, engineering, etc. But I think if you look at sort of industrial use cases, there's still a very big area of knowledge which is completely proprietary to the company, and where this data integration and doing that in a kind of precise and customized way is extremely important. So personally, I don't really believe in this idea of the SaaS apocalypse that is kind of now being promoted. Like, okay, we have something like OpenClaw and now all software will disappear. So I think you have kind of foundational systems in industry which contain the master data, and you will still need to kind of build a bespoke integration and optimize the accuracy of the answers on that information.
You mentioned, I think, 10 minutes ago, multi-model approach, right? So what about code? Is that an option for you? Because we also have in the industrial setting a lot of very specialized code when it comes to CNC machines or when it comes to PLCs. Is it an option for you to go into the whole topic of coding?
Yeah, so code is actually quite an easy modality, because obviously the frontier labs are investing a lot of time to have those capabilities on a very high level, right? If you look at benchmarks like software engineering benchmarks, yeah, the scores are going through the roof in the last couple months. I think where industry is even more special, and which is I would consider more multimodal, is when you talk about structured data, which comes in tabular formats in SQL.
Tabular data, yeah.
In Excel sheets, in tensor data coming from the actual factories.
It's time series, right?
Time series, yeah. I think there you will still, for a foreseeable future, need specialized models. And for example, something like 3D models, right? If you're talking about
CAD/CAM
kind of models, I think that's where the frontier currently is.
But are you working on these topics to integrate, let's say, specialized models in your platform to run time series prediction or classification tasks?
Yeah, so we are focusing right now especially on the CAD models, on the 3D models.
What is your idea there?
Well, if you want to use frontier models, they don't have this capability to understand 3D. So basically, you have to convert the CAD models into an intermediate format, and then give kind of the AI agents access to multiple views and multiple, you know, layers of from product manufacturing information to dimensions to bill of materials type of data to also the shape and the way parts are connected in the model. So we're working on that right now, and we're planning to release that capability on the Hannover Messe in April.
How do you transfer the CAD model to what? What is the goal? In what kind of format do you transfer that CAD model?
Yeah, so first of all, you have lots of different CAD systems, right? And so whether you have, SolidWorks or Creo or Siemens. So you first need to kind of find an intermediate CAD representation layer. So we are using STEP as that representation layer. And then vision language models still don't understand STEP. So then we're creating a large series of different parametric views of that intermediate representation, so that in the end it becomes visual, but it's kind of interactive visual. So basically the VLM kind of navigate around the different details of the CAD format.
Okay, interesting. And what about tabular data and time series? Is it the next step for you to integrate these kind of models in your platform?
Yeah, so I think there are some other European players who are working a lot on time series. That's not a specialty of ours. But in general, I think the ability of AI agents to interact with tabular data and with also external tools that maybe do model time series is an important capability. And we have already built some of that in, especially like the ability to access data in SQL and in Excel spreadsheets.
Okay. What is on your R&D agenda? So you mentioned CAD, but we will see that at Hannover Messe you mentioned. What is also on your R&D agenda?
Yeah, so an area that we are investing a lot in the R&D space is optimizations of multi-agent systems.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Basically, if you have a more interesting functionality, like take, for example, deep research, right? You have a search agent, you have a summarization agent, you have an orchestrator and planner, you have a report writer. So how these different modules work together on your own data in your own industrial domain, that is defined more or less by the multi-agent architecture and the prompts. And you want to kind of do an optimization in that architecture layer, because in many cases, you don't have even access to the weights of the models, right? So we are investing a lot in like evolutionary algorithms to optimize these kind of multi-agent systems that are similar to deep research and run for a long time on a particular use case or task on small amounts of examples.
Mm-hmm. How do you see the future of all the big LLMs companies? Do we will see more and bigger models, more improving, or do we see smaller models, agentic, specialized models? What is your opinion on that?
Yeah, so I think we're all in the AI industry kind of piggybacking on the advances of the raw intelligence of the core LLMs, right? Or VLMs these days, because they are multimodal. And I think that will continue for some time to come to improve. But in my view, that is also at the same time being commoditized, right? So you see open source models coming from China, also from Europe and from the US. And in my view, the gap between the best open source models and the frontier closed models has been decreasing over the last year or so, right? With companies like DeepSeek or QN models or others. So I think that in my view, the sort of the raw intelligence of the models is actually becoming more like electricity. It doesn't matter where you take it from. It matters how you tie it into your applications and how you customize it for your use cases. And that's where more and more value is being delivered.
But do you see yourself as an, let's say, integrator, or is it more a scaling product you are selling? What is your definition? What is your company?
So I think it's really important to do both. And I think Zeta Alpha is a bit special in that we are self-financed, bootstrapped, and we can do both because there's no like...
No pressure to scale very fast.
External investor saying, yeah, services don't scale. So I really believe very strongly in building these kind of deep service partnerships with the customers that allow you, to move from prototype to production and to maintain high accuracy over time. And at the same time, go very fast on the development of the underlying platform and be at the edge of where the frontier models are.
Okay. Jakub, I keep my fingers crossed for you and your company. I'm really looking forward to meet you at Hannover Messe because we will have there a discussion with your customers, and I have the honor to be part of this discussion. I'm really looking forward. Thanks a lot, Jakub, and all the best to Amsterdam.
Thank you, and really looking forward to that as well. And I think that's kind of the discussion is all about sovereign AI. So I just wanted to add one more thing. Well, obviously, a lot of these frontier models are currently not European, but I think we have kind of two trump cards in Europe to get our act together in the AI space. And one is open source. And we really have to kind of, make use of the best advances of the open source AI model space. And the other is the application area in industry. So I think that's a unique recipe that brings a lot of strength to Europe.
But the industry needs to learn how to handle open source. What I often see is that a lot of, let's say, mid-sized companies do not understand what open source means. But this is a totally different story.
All right, let's go into that some other time.
Thanks a lot, Jakub. It was a pleasure.
Thanks, Robert.